Okay, so we are live here today with the Shakti Rise Immersion, which is my dedication to the understanding of the rise and integration of feminine consciousness on the planet right now. And this spring, we are studying some of the goddesses of what we would call fullness, Lakshmi being one of them and Lalita another. And these goddesses of what we call Purnatva or fullness have a lot to do with feeling not just sort of outwardly full, full of things that we do in life, but actually inwardly full. And this is going to be our topic for today's discussion. And our guest this morning is Marcy Goldman. Good morning or good afternoon, Marcy.
Hi, Jeannie. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you here. Marcy is a beautiful soul living in Boulder, and she has a nutrition background, and her business is in really, what is that tagline you have on your website about women?
I help women who lust for balance get their energy and mojo back so they can change the world.
Oh, say that again. That was so good.
I help women who lust for balance get their energy and mojo back so they can change the world and show up powerfully.
That is just, this is like so in line with this work. So I'm going to read to you all Marcy's background, and anything you want to add into this, Marcy, we welcome. So Marcy is here to fill you up with fad-free, counterculture results-based nutrition to get you off the diet crazy train and back in control of your appetite and health. Her work combines functional medicine strategies with nourishing wise women traditions, a combination she has honed over the last 10 plus years in private practice and leading group programs and retreats. Marcy's trainings include living on a farm during her shamanic apprenticeship with renowned herbalist Susan Weed. She's the herbal educator for Wish Garden Herbs. She graduated from Institute of Integrative Nutrition in 1999 and has most recently received her certificate as a mental health recovery coach and nutrition for addictions coach from the Alliance for Addictions. It goes on to say that she loves social media, and you can find her and like her page on Twitter and other social media.
Thanks, yeah.
So is there anything else you want to add to that bio?
Well, I actually like it, hearing it. You read it, so it's pretty good for now.
Sometimes we just need that reflection back, right? And, you know, what I remember running into you at the Pico Tea House years ago when you were putting your Mojo Mastery together, and I just thought, wow, this is really cool. This program looks like it's not just your sort of run-of-the-mill cleansing program. In fact, you actually get to eat on this program. And I want to get into this topic of I want to hear about Mojo Mastery, but I also want to get into this topic of fullness, or this word that we have touched on together around being satiated or full. And I've been accused, in fact, recently, one of my dear friends growing up said to me, he said, Jeannie, are you ever going to be sated? And I started laughing, and I said, probably not, because I'm such a searcher. I'm such a seeker. And I know that from the traditions that I've studied, we talk about how the universe is constantly expanding herself, almost like a woman's orgasm can be, so effulgent, so ongoing, that sometimes I do feel that way. I feel like, will I ever be sated? Will it ever be enough? And on the one hand, there's that beauty part of the seeker that always wants more. On the other hand, that can be a really scary, addictive place to be if we're not careful, where we're always seeking more and more and more. That there isn't, we don't feel like we're enough, or we're not enough, and we want more. And so there's this, you know, in yoga we would say there's this midline of, yeah, being the seeker, but also being full in the present moment of where we are. And I think that food is an incredible place to look at where where do we fill up and how do we fill up? I just had took my daughter skiing yesterday, and we stopped to get Indian food on the way down, and we both were like, whoa, we are so full. And I said to her, well, we don't have to finish. Like, we're full. Like, we're done for now. And I'd love to hear from your perspective and your background and anything you want to share around, you know, your own journey with feeling, well, you know, there's this word satiated or sated, full enough. And then there's this idea of, like, in yoga we say that there's this constant feeling of not being enough. And how do we work with that?
Mm.
I'd love to hear from you.
This is such a great conversation. I just got so excited on writing all of these bullet points down. The topic, well, this is a great conversation because I came from a family with a compulsive overeater. My father was a food addict, really, and he was morbidly obese and just eating out of control. He didn't have control, and to watch that as a child was so sad, and I really made had a moment, several moments in my childhood where I made it my job to figure out the middle way. Like, because the other part of that story is he finally decided to do something about his weight and his addiction because he was in so much physical pain. He had gotten pancreatitis, which is excruciating. And so he did what he was told to do, which was to go on a diet. And, you know, at that time, in the 80s, he became the biggest loser of the 80s, which was like he lost over 100 pounds. He got super fit. I mean, he was like the man, like it was a really positive thing in a lot of people's eyes because he lost all this weight and he looked so much better. But I knew that that still was not really healthy, that was an extreme and the other side of the pendulum. And I was just like, there's got to be another way here. There's got to be a middle way to this crazy craziness. So
Yeah, I was just going to interject that, you know, it's really interesting because I come from a background of alcoholism in my family. My father has been alcoholic as far as I can remember and is 80 and still battling it. And it's another example of how the wound, in yoga we say the wound, if we choose it, can be our greatest asset. And, you know, for me, I never had a problem with alcohol, but I did get to be a little over excessive with exercise, including yoga, at a certain time in my life in my 20s when, you know, I just, like, more. And and I could see that edge. I was always aware of the edge of, like, wow, that is too much. That was too much. I ran one marathon, and I was like, that was too much. I don't need to do that again. But if we don't have an inner gauge, it can be very challenging to know what the middle ground is. But I think it's really the point I really want to make is just it's interesting that we both come from fathers that have overindulged in some way or another. And you know, it sounds like your father really made you know, his best stab at, you know, kind of trying to find that middle ground, but maybe went too far to the other extreme. And that is so common with food addictions, it seems, but with any addiction, you know, it's one pendulum to the other, and then there's no middle ground, there's no health in that. But the wound can be the very impetus to, I know for me, the pain of watching that as a child and as an adult, and even as whatever I am right now, a mother, it's quite painful to watch someone you love go through that process. And at the same time, I feel like it's been my gift. It's been my impetus to heal myself and heal my own indulgences, which have come in the forms of exercise and, probably under eating at certain times in my life, you know, in college, where, you know, it was sort of like you ran, but you had grapefruits for lunch and stuff. It just wasn't healthy. So tell us how you navigated then, to find this middle ground, in your practice and your own health.
Well, I liked when you said the word inner gauge, and that is really what I teach and what is crucial to health, finding health, because there will never be a health from following the rules. There will never be health from, you know, listening to somebody else, because it's so subtle and it's so, you know, that inner voice that I'm sure you talk about a lot. So part of being aware of the inner voice is to quiet the noise. And in nutrition, the way we quiet the noise is we lower the inflammation. So inflammation and overeating or undereating drowns out that inner voice. So it's actually important to feel pain. It's actually important to feel the discomfort of overeating. So your gauge has a new set point of, that's uncomfortable. I'm going to try eating a little less next time. And so pain is powerful. And, of course, there's so many shades of pain. But it's that subtle discomfort that a lot of us don't like to feel, especially in our bodies. Overeating for women who are afraid of gaining weight is excruciating, so we go exercise. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't allow us to use our inner gauge. We have to sit through that process and just be with it. So that's one practice that I highly recommend. And
Can you reiterate that practice again, so that the inner gauge, just say that again, that was really beautiful.
I'll try. The inner gauge is listening and being with the discomfort and not trying to make it go away by exercising or remedying the situation. And that's why cleansing is so damaging, because it's another remedy for the pain and discomfort. A lot of people are drawn to cleanses because they feel like they've overindulged, they feel dirty, they've partied too much, they've been in too much excess. So instead of going right to the remedy, to just be with and sit through the discomfort through practices that you teach, like meditation and yoga, really powerful.
Yeah.
I have a lot of other tools I can talk about. But.
Okay. No, I love this because, you know, in yoga we do, and I particularly at this stage in my evolution as a teacher, I have, and I just turned 51, which I'm not really I'm like working on really saying that out loud, like, and being okay with it, because I'm sort of stunned that I'm already here. And at the same time, I really welcome in this beautiful time in my life where I know what it's like to feel balance and to feel health and to know when it's too much and to gauge my practices according to the day and the rhythm and the moon cycle. And meditation has become a huge part of my my aging process. And I meditate twice a day. And the beautiful part of meditation that I have known for years, but really I would say haven't experienced like I am now, is how full and how complete and how energized I am from a meditation practice, which is really not doing anything but sitting in the muck and sitting in the beauty and sitting in all of it, and certainly sitting in discomfort and in the body at times. So I love what you're saying, because I have been in those situations where, not too often, because I seem to like hit an extreme but know it's extreme, and then I back out. I have this inner gauge that as a kid I even had it. It was like, that was too much. But I did push those boundaries. And at times, they felt extreme to me. And, you know, I can still do a pretty extreme yoga asana practice, but I don't do it every day anymore. And, you know, some days I just feel like restorative, and some days I feel like long hold. And I try to teach from that perspective of, you know, what is happening with the moon right now, and how can we be in the flow of nature rather than pushing against her? And so I love this inner gauge that you've brought forward, and actually sitting in your discomfort. And then you said something about cleansing being damaging, and I'd love to know, you know, more about, because cleanses are so big right now. And, you know, I loved it when I had that little Facebook post and you commented on it, because I was like, what the heck is up with the juicing in the winter? You know, like, I'm so confused. Like, sometimes it does taste really good, but to go on a full, you know, 7 or 10 day juice cleanse in the middle of winter didn't make sense to me. You know, I get really cold, and so I really wanted, you know, warming broths and things like that. But it seems like we're at this, you know, place where we're really exercise crazed in this country, and we have this thing about cleansing all the time.
Yeah.
And that can't be the middle ground. I mean, yes, I mean, clearing out seems like we all need to clear out. It's springtime, and what a beautiful time to clear out. But I'd love to hear, you know, how you approach clearing out the inner body.
Yes. Well, in nature always represents what works. And when my teacher talked about this, the oil spills, and there was these inlets, and I don't even remember where, but it was one of the big oil spills in the sea, and where they came in with cleansers to clean out the oil, they damaged the earth, and no new life was able to grow, or it was stunted. In the area where they nourished the sea and gave it bacteria, that the sea naturally cleansed, naturally ate itself. It ate the dirt. It ate the oil. So my philosophy of cleansing is to nourish your body.
Mm.
Nourish with food that actually creates life and creates more good bacteria, since our bodies are mostly made up of bacteria. So when you strip your intestines, which a lot of the cleanses kind of aggravate this intestinal, this like fluid, soft, mucilaginous intestinal lining that we have, and you cleanse it and you strip it with a lot of these things like, I'm drawing a blank, but herbs that become addictive also, that cleanse out the colon, you are not creating an environment for healthy bacteria and healthy life form. So this also comes down to where did this all come from? Where did the idea of cleansing come from? So my teacher taught me this heroic tradition of healing. She taught that there are three traditions of healing: the scientific, the heroic, and the wise woman. And the scientific is very linear, and what's not measurable doesn't exist. And the science will heal you, the technology will heal you, and the drugs will heal you. And there's a place for scientific healing. The heroic method was people who are getting frustrated with the limitations of scientific healing. It's not really a healing modality, is it? It's more for traumatic injuries, and they do a damn good job of, you know, of surgery and dealing with traumatic injuries, but they don't do such a great job with healing. So people started to look for alternative methods, and in this, and outgrew the heroic method, but it also has its limitations, because the heroic method, as you can hear by the name, is like no pain, no gain. It's like you have to kind of work for it. You have to suffer a little in order to reap the rewards. And this kind of comes with the territory of colonics and cleansing and fasting and following the rules. And it does take you out of yourself, because when you're following the rules, you're not listening. You're following rules. And the metaphor for the heroic tradition is the circle. When you're in the circle, life is good. You feel safe. You know exactly what to do next. And I get that a lot from people. Margie, please just tell me what to eat. You know, tell me what to eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and I'll be okay. Really, that's not the ultimate answer, and that's really not what we need. But we're so frustrated and overwhelmed, understandably. And then we go outside the circle because that is super restricting. And over time, we're just like, okay, I can't deal with restriction. I'm a rebel and I'm free. And then you're outside the circle and you've got no rules and feels really good until it starts to feel overwhelming, starts to feel scary. There's no direction. So you jump back in. So you're really caught in, you know, this limited choices there. And the wise tradition is teaching us that you will heal you. This is self-healing. And you know, herbs and plants are your medicine, and it's what's closest to you. You know, the heroic tradition gives you the medicine from the Amazon rainforest and from over here and from over there that you can't find yourself. You have to get from me, and it's actually really expensive. So you end up relying on somebody else. And so the wise tradition teaches that it's that the philosophy of nourishment, and that everything is how it should be in this moment, and that you are on the spiral path. You are not in a circle, in either in or out. So there is nothing to fix in the wise tradition. There's nothing to cleanse. In the heroic tradition, comes from the principles of Protestant and religious beliefs that you have sinned and you must repent for your sins. So there's a very big punishment set up there. And so that, I teach this because this is what helps guide people to make their choices in the world. Once they understand these three traditions, they can say, you know, is this nourishing me? Is this empowering me? Or is it making me feel like I've done something wrong and I need to fix it?
Right.
That was
very
a mouthful.
Interesting. Yeah, so
yeah,
it comes back to that inner gauge again.
Mm-hmm.
And yet so many of us have lost the ability, and I'm saying this sort of as a general sort of observation, we've lost the ability to trust in the inner gauge. I feel like that's a big part of my work, is to bring us back, including myself, back to trusting my inner gauge, which is, you know, what the seat of meditation is all about, is opening up that third eye and really being able to intuit on all levels, including your, and especially the choices that you're making out in the world, whether it's food or, you know, partnership or your next vacation. I mean, the mundane to the very deep levels of, you know, getting yourself breakfast or sitting down to meditate. I mean, these are all choices that we make through an inner gauge. And so I'm curious how then can you maybe share a few other of your practices that, you know, draw us back to trusting? I mean, are there other things you do to develop that inner gauge? You know, I'm thinking about, like, my son right now, who has extraordinary allergies to so many foods, and he's a super, super, super sensitive boy. He's 19, and part of it is he's such an open channel that I think he gets all this, you know, this input, and including from his parents. And he just needs to kind of settle into himself. And I'm trying to give him the tools without being a parent, which is hard, you know, or a yoga mm-hmm. teacher, you know, like how to establish that inner gauge. So I'm curious, again, if you have other practices that that you might share.
Yes, absolutely. And this one, first one, won't completely connect with your son, but I'll get to that. And
Okay. The
first one is eating. You know, so much of what we're told to do when we need to heal something or shift something is to not eat. And to me, that's the exact opposite of what we need to do, because so much of our gauge is thrown off because of nutrition. Even in our modern world with abundance and with people eating what seems like a lot, we are lacking in nutrition. We're lacking in nutrients like minerals and vitamins and amino acids and essential fatty acids. So eating real food 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, is a really great way to start to understand your gauge. That's why I did create my 7-day meal plan, because I wanted people to have a guideline. I think guidelines are helpful. You know, if you can pick a guideline that is mostly all-inclusive, start with something that's more inclusive rather than exclusive. Get in the habit of feeding yourself and thinking ahead and planning your food, because that's such a difficult thing for someone that wasn't taught that. And then you can start to get a sense of what feels good and what doesn't, especially if you're eating a whole foods, real food diet. So that's one of my practices is to follow a week. You know, if it's my meal plan or something you're drawn to or your grandmother's, in which she would eat, eat 3 meals a day and see what feels good. Was you know, the oatmeal breakfast, like, did you feel tired from that or did you feel energized from that? These are the things I look for after I eat. 1 to 2 hours after I eat, I look for my energy levels. Do I feel more energized or do I feel drained? My cravings, am I looking for more food 1 to 2 hours later, my snacky, or looking for sugar, or do I feel satiated and full for a good, you know, 2 to 3 hours minimal after I eat? And then my mental state, is my mood good, or does it drop, or is it difficult to focus or speak? So those 3 areas of energy, cravings, and mental wellness.
That is
how I gauge.
I love that. I feel like I just had this, you know, hit. Of course, this is nothing new to us, but to, you know, this course that I'm offering is all about Shakti and coming into the understanding of, you know, what is Shakti? What is life force? What is prana? What is chi? And when we talk about nourishment on the level of our food, you know, you're just bringing up these great ways to gauge that level of nourishment. Is it, do you feel sated or satiated for 2 to 3 hours, you know, you said minimally after you eat a meal? And then, you know, the consistency of 3 meals is something I need to hear again and again because of my schedule sometimes and my yoga practices sometimes. I will skip a breakfast, and lately I've just been having a cashew bar because I'm like, I need something that's going to sustain me and my blood sugar. I've come to understand my blood sugar so much better in the last several years of, oh, that's a spike in my blood sugar. Oh, I feel stable now. You know, it just seems like when we're not with that inner gauge, we go sort of to this subliminal place of acting out. And again, this goes back to my yoga and my dedication to meditation, because just doing the yoga practice will change your cravings. It's fascinating. Your feelings of fullness when you meditate, are your energy levels increase automatically. But what I'm kind of intuiting here with the whole food part is that we're also doing this with the prana of food. Our choices around what kind of foods hold more energetics, and how can we get foods that have more nutrients and more sustainability in the earth itself, and the vitamins, and you know, we hear so much about depletion of our soils now, and so we have these choices that we're making on the level of prana, and mm-hmm. and that starts with, you know, like your choice of where you get your food, correct? And then
yeah.
how you prepare it, and then how you eat it, and how you plan for it. And it all has to do with energy.
Yes.
As you were speaking, I just was like, wow, this is all about Shakti.
Nice. And in yeah. the yoga community, there's a lot of, there is a influence of certain foods have more Shakti and more energy, and those are generally the uncooked foods, the raw foods. And I want to caution yogis from listening to that outside source and tuning in like you did with the raw juices in the winter, because it's not for everybody. Everybody is so different, and you have to really use your inner gauge. And blood sugar, I'm so glad you brought that up, is a huge tool that I use for gauging satiety and appetite, because I use the word true appetite and false appetite. They're both appetites, and they both are powerful and compel you to eat or consume. And the false appetite isn't something to be dismissed, but it's just to be aware of, that a low blood sugar state is a false appetite. Because, and it will make you eat whatever is in front of you. You know, you can have a pretty well sense of nutritious food, but if you're crashing, you'll take anything. So you want to avoid those extremes of blood sugar. You want to avoid dropping and carry those bars with you. Have that bar for breakfast because it's something, mm-hmm. and I highly recommend that. And I would tell my clients to not leave the house without food, that you carry your purse and it always has food in it, or you have a food bag. Because you never know where you're going to be and how long you're going to be out. And that's how you take care of yourself, is being prepared.
Yeah, that's such a great practice that I had to kind of do that with my kids when they were young. And I do that for myself. I really do. I really now can really gauge blood sugar. And I'm actually a person that needs to eat something before yoga practice, because otherwise, I will feel that during the practice, and I don't feel good. I feel like, oh, my God, I'm hungry, and, you know, I'm in the middle of this practice, and I'm not supposed to eat, and, you know, and so, you know, I have, I'll have a cashew bar before I go into a practice, and I feel sustained and nourished, and I don't feel hungry, and I think that's, you know, that's another misunderstood fact for yogis and, you know, maybe even athletes to some degree, that, you know, you're not supposed to eat, which is, you know, sort of an old tradition. You really don't want a lot in your belly when you practice, but at the same time, you don't want these, you know, spikes in your blood sugar. It just doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were saying something that caught my mind around, you know, this whole course around what I'm teaching is my real interest in what's happening on so many levels on the planet right now, as far as women and men, but women in particular coming into their potency and leadership in their particular genius and gifts and offering them into the world. And I feel like what you're doing, Marcy, is you're a revolutionary in the way that you are approaching, I don't want to say cleansing, but nourishment around, you know, going, really looking at truth for yourself and offering that from a place that's not dependent on a system that you've learned, that you're just replicating. It seems like you've really done some testing on yourself, and I'm sure that the deeper, you know, the deeper layer of that is not only to heal yourself, but heal your lineage. And when you heal yourself and you heal your lineage, you are healing your future self. And I love that because in yoga we say that, you know, how we live our lives now will most likely affect our next incarnation. If you believe in reincarnation, that we actually come back, and that, you know, the yogis say that the way you live your life now will impact not only your death, but will impact your future incarnations. And I don't know what you think of that, or if you believe in that. It doesn't really matter. I think that healing our lineages is huge, and I just wanted to bring that around. That, like, wow, like, you're revolutionizing really the way we think about food today. And I'd love for you to comment just
Thank
on
you.
That. Like this is new.
I feel like this is so big, and I'm so passionate about it. And it's big because we're kind of at a crisis in our healthcare system, and the way that modern diseases are on the rise. And it's not pretty, you know, the side effects and the consequences are not pretty, and especially when it comes to addiction and mental health issues, because that's what malnutrition leads to, addiction, this need to feel balanced. Our bodies are always trying to find balance, so we will find it no matter what, whether it's through a muffin at the cafe to get our blood sugar up, or, you know, a cigarette, or, you know, more serious stimulants. So it's really important work. Thank you for acknowledging that. And this can tie into that issue that you brought up with your son around the sensitivities, if you want me to go into that.
Yeah, I would love to. Love to go into that.
Well, it hits on lineage, because there is a lineage now of more food sensitivities, because the lineage we're creating without our intention and with is less good bacteria in our guts, and that sets us up for more food sensitivities and allergies. So we're also creating a lineage of low serotonin. We're passing down deficient neurotransmitters in our brain. So we're having more depression and more anxiety than we've ever had. These things can be changed with nutrition, with nutrients. And so, but I also do think that being that sensitive is, again, the gift inside. You know, I was also a highly sensitive child, and I was sensitive to food, and I was sensitive to alcohol. You know, I really wanted to party like the rest of them, but in college, and I just couldn't. I had maxed out and had to, like, take care of myself in ways that none of my peers were doing. And it's made me into the practitioner that I am today. And it's not easy being sensitive. And there is a way to be less sensitive, by addressing the gut health and having more bacteria, strengthening your adrenal system. But it is important to avoid some of those foods at the beginning, but I do think there's a way to add things back in, that we shouldn't be too limited in our diet. And really, it's just a message of the body. It's not, you know, the path of continue to limit, continue to limit.
I think that's a really important point as well. Of course, we all know this living in Boulder, like, everything is gluten-free and everything is, you know, milk-free and dairy-free. And I'm not saying, like, I'm a pretty big component of not eating a ton of gluten. But at the same time, I really love a good pizza. And I don't seem to have the intolerance that many people suffer from. But at the same time, you know, I wonder about this whole idea around satiation. Is like, I had a friend who has written a book on this, and I remember her saying, you know, well, I'd rather have one cookie that had white sugar in it than 10 that had, I don't know, stevia in it or something, you know, and I just, it was an interesting comment. I was like, oh, satiation, you know, it's just an interesting point. And I'm not saying, you know, everyone go grab a cookie that has white sugar in it. I don't really do that myself, but it was an interesting point she made that, mm-hmm. you know, we kind of trade it out in a way. We think that if we eat this, we can have a lot of it or something because we have this idea that it's better for us. Or, you know, this whole thing with almond milk is a really interesting example of that. You know, I just wonder, you know, are our guts going to be so sensitive to almond milk because we're all doing that now? Or, you know.
Yes, it's true. Yeah. That's, you know, my GI guy that I send people to get food tested, he says almonds are on the rise now for food sensitivities because of this. Yeah.
Interesting. And that was true of my son. He does a lot of almond butter because he couldn't do peanut butter, and now they have him on cashew butter, you know. And it's just that overuse of one food that is, I think, really playing havoc with him. So it's a very interesting point.
Sorry, I just want to add, and besides, you know, doing the food rotation, which is so important, but to really focus on nourishing his gut bacteria and nourishing the gut lining with our guts, really like mucilaginous things. We have also been taught to not think mucus is good. But
right.
Mucus is really important. So we can take foods away, but if we're not addressing the nourishment factor, then we're not going to heal.
You know, it's so interesting when you said mucus. I had this whole, like, inner, like, dialogue. It was like, you know, the goddess, Lakshmi and Lalita, are so about sensuality and are fully sort of sexual beings incarnated in all their beauty and abundance and prosperity. And, you know, Lalita loves a beautiful meal under the moon's light. And she's all about that. I was thinking of the moon's light, and this is kind of a deep sort of inner dialogue with a yogi right now, but the moon's light in the deep Ayurvedic wisdom is all about ojas. It's all about that deep nourishment of the fluid body. And like ghee being one of those sort of ojas sort of beautiful foods that we can eat. And and I was just thinking of unctuous, that word unctuous, and how these goddesses are really about you coming into your unctuousness, if that's a word, or that. And I was thinking, God, it's so interesting having this relationship with mucus and unctuousness, and not that we want to be over
slippery.
Mucus, but
mucus could also, we could use that word slippery.
Yes, slippery. Interesting. Very interesting, yeah.
Seaweed is naturally slippery.
It's naturally slippery. Wow. Very interesting. What kind of foods would you say are kind of a good sort of mucus for the body?
Yeah. Seaweed is a superfood in my book. I have different definitions of, or different food choices of superfoods. And we underuse seaweed in this country, and, you know, it can be, like, you can take an inch worth of kombu, which is it's like a type of kelp, and put that into your soups, into a pot that you're making grain with, or beans, and that adds a lot of minerals and a lot of slipperiness.
Yes.
Cinnamon sticks have that little bit of mucilaginous quality. You can in your tea, throw in some cinnamon sticks, or just with water, have some cinnamon. Licorice root is also, can be slippery.
Yes.
And slippery elm is a bark that you can buy in lozenge form. It's in a lot of gut health formulas, and you can buy the powder and mix it with honey and suck on slippery elm lozenges. It's used to heal people who are very compromised in their digestive systems. Marshmallow root, slippery.
Yes.
Comfrey leaf infusions. You can make herbal teas that you steep overnight. That is in my meal plan, by the way, if anybody wants the instructions on how to make an herbal infusion. That's one of my superfoods.
Yeah, and they can find your meal plan on your website, correct?
Yes, it's marcygoldman.com/meal plan. And that's M-A-R-C-I-E. G-O-L-D-M-A-N. Yeah.
Yeah, I just actually signed up for Marcy's newsletter and saw that plan there. It's very, very generous. Everyone should go get that and read through it and try some things out. Gosh, I wish we had more time because I think this conversation is so, so beautiful. Is there anything you want to leave us with around satiation, fullness, that you want to leave us? Any last remarks around your work and how you help women and men come into that feeling of fullness and nourishment and satiation?
Well, I want to encourage people to not be afraid of hunger. To experience hunger, to let themselves, once they've figured out a little bit more about how to balance their blood sugar so they're not having that low blood sugar hunger, what I call the false appetite, but the true appetite hunger is so amazing, so powerful. And we've come to be afraid of hunger. I know Dr. Oz is saying, I eat Carrie almonds and I eat them every, 2 hours so I don't have hunger. And I just thought, I don't think the direction we need to go to be afraid of overeating. So to not fear the hunger is, and to do these practices of, with the yoga and the meditation, that's like feeding us on so many levels. And then to find the foods that feed you, what really feels good to you, what feels good to you. Just ask yourself that and you'll come up with a lot of foods that really work just by asking that question.
I love this. I love what you've brought forward today. Really, I've been writing notes. I just, I love to hear it and be reminded of this because I forget. And I feel like just having this conversation makes me want to really look again and again and again at how to nourish myself with food in a more profound way. And I'm just really grateful that you took the time to come on to share with us. And I did want to mention that you do these Mojo Mastery group sessions, and I'm just wondering if you have one coming up.
Thanks for asking, Jeannie. I am working really hard on getting one to launch in the spring, in May, and it'll be a virtual program online. So if you do sign up for my meal plan, you'll get information about it. And it is a nourishing program that gives you that kind of jumpstart feeling that people are looking for via eating.
Yeah, it's just like going to a yoga class in a way. My intention is really to kind of set my students free to have their own self-initiatory practice. But what I'd like to do is, please come and remember the practice, remember what we're doing here. And I feel like that is the same with food. We need guides like you. We need people that are passionate about nourishment to show us the way again. And so I'm really excited. I may just jump in the May session because I have wanted to do this with you for a long time. I want to thank you again for coming on to the Shakti Rise Immersion spring session on the goddesses of abundance and fullness and satiation are the ones that we're focusing on this spring. And this just adds a beautiful component to our discussion. So thank you so much.
I'm so happy. Thank you. It's been an honor.
Yay.